Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Monday edition of the Yard. Yeah, it was a wet and wild weekend down in Red Stick, Louisiana. We didn't get the result we wanted. Of course, we spoke after the Thursday game in an abbreviated Friday show. You'll get the full 90 minutes today, maybe a few more. We'll see. You never know how I'm feeling. But yeah, unhappy with the result. I'm happy, unhappy with where we sit in the SEC standings. Yes, we have played some difficult teams, but we should be a difficult team. We are a big team, too. We expect big things here in Starkville. I'm going to talk extensively about that before we get out of here today. And here's the thing. I wrote about this yesterday. If you haven't read the story, the genuine article, I'd encourage you to do so. A lot of my thoughts and about the program, about the brand. And you know, here's one of the things that is an inconvenient truth for some. I suspect it's the same people that, in many respects, you know, sat against a wall nursing a Bud Light all night and looking at girls and wondering why nobody come up and talk to them. But people seem to get their feelings hurt when I say we are a baseball school. If you need evidence of that, just look at the way that people are upset these days. And it's so interesting, too. There are so many people that don't want you to have an opinion about baseball. And they say we should de-emphasize baseball, but now that we are off to a difficult start in SEC play, they want to have an opinion about baseball. I don't think that there should be any validity granted to those opinions. You know what I'm saying? You know, part of the deal. But we all love Mississippi State baseball so much, and as I put in the story yesterday, I mean, it's kind of like when you've got a sick relative, right? I mean, you don't care what the treatment is. You just want your loved one to be well. Well, our loved one is Mississippi State baseball. We want Mississippi State baseball to be healthy. We want to be the kings of the college baseball diamond. That's what we want. And that's one of the things that I really wanted to push home yesterday. You know, if your goal is to host a regional, it would be human nature. Like all year long, it's like, hey, we got to host, we got to host, got to host. Then once you reach that goal, you have a tendency to relax. You know, if your goal is we got to get to Omaha, well, then it's like, okay, we made it to Omaha, and then we'll just kind of see what happens. You know, I go back to a press conference in 2013 after we lost to UCLA in a national championship series. And John Cohen said, you know what, we've been to Omaha, and Omaha is not enough. One of these days, we're going to come down here and kick that door down. Well, eventually we did, 8 years later. But everything that we do related to baseball needs to be at a national championship level. Our goal every single day should be to win the national title. And everything we do from a recruiting standpoint, portal standpoint, everything has got to be to win the national title. Not to just make it to Omaha. Not to just host a regional. Not to just make the tournament. Not to just have a winning record in the SEC. Our goal every year, all those milestones are important, but they should be means to a national championship end, period. And if everybody on board is not committed to that, then we got to get them off board. Does that make sense? I don't care who it is. From the cleaning staff to the coaching staff to the administration, everybody involved, if we are not all focused and have tunnel vision towards a national championship, then we're doing it wrong. Everything has got to be about winning the national title. Your experience as a fan should be a national championship experience. When you come to Duty Noble Field on a Tuesday, everybody involved, from game management to concessions, everybody needs to be at a national championship level. You know, we talk about, you know, it's the little things, and that's absolutely correct. The little things matter. You know, and with that in mind, you know, I think facility management's a big part of it too. You know, you got to make sure we got the best baseball park in the country. There should be an incredible amount of cleanliness and pride that go into that facility. We didn't build that facility to sit there and let it age. We got to constantly maintain that facility. When you guys go to the restroom at Duty Noble Field, it needs to be plainly stocked. And if that means that we have to have somebody in there at all times to do that, then so be it. 90 minutes before a ball game, when you guys come in and you file in and you find your seats and you go to the concession stand, everything in the concession stand needs to be ready to go awaiting your arrival. Those things aren't always happening. And so those are the things that concern me. You know, I don't just mean what happens on the field. I think everything we do related to baseball has to be at a national championship level. You're not going to get there by accident. You get there by what you do every single day. Not just every game, but every day. That's practice. That's recruiting. That's branding. That's marketing. Everything. Everything has to be national championship level. And maybe that should be our rallying cry, you know. Another title. Everything should be about getting another title. And that's what you guys want. I want a baseball program that is dominant. I want a baseball program that is feared. I told the Mississippi State Administrator over the weekend, I want fans, when the schedule comes out, to say, hey, I'd love to see Duty Noble Field, but I know that's going to be a series that we lose because we're playing Mississippi State. I want fans to build their schedules, their vacation time, around the Mississippi State baseball schedule. And that's our fans and their fans. I want their fans to say, hey, I think we're going to go down to the beach for a family weekend in April rather than go watch LSU baseball because Mississippi State is coming in. I'll just watch it on my phone. That's how I feel. That's the kind of reverence I want people to have for this program. And it's not just up to a coach. And it's not just up to an AD or a single player. It's up to everybody involved. Those are things that I'm very passionate about. And at the end of the day, I want what's best for Mississippi State baseball. The M over S matters above everything. Everything. It's bigger than all of us. As a matter of fact, I'm going to read you a text message. I won't tell you who it's from, but it's from a former Mississippi State Administrator. He said, I hope that you and the family are well. I read your piece on the site and listened to the Out of Bounds podcast. I enjoyed both. I try to watch occasionally when our guys are on the road, but I haven't seen a whole lot. I hope the Dogs get back on track, whatever that means in today's world. One thing you're dead on about is nothing is bigger than the brand. It will outlast all of us. And that is something we have to consider. You know, the quote's over, but that's something we have to think about, you know. I mean, long before you and I were Mississippi State fans, there was Mississippi State baseball. And long before we had much to cheer about in college basketball, we had Mississippi State baseball. And long before we hired Major Raff Sassy and he took us to our first bowl games, we had Mississippi State baseball. You know, and I think that's an important aspect of our identity and the Bulldog DNA. We are a baseball school. And again, if that is offensive to you, that is a you problem because I don't know that you're in touch with reality. It's who we are. We didn't build the grandest cathedral in the history of college baseball, you know, because we're a water polo school. That's not how it works. We're committed to baseball. And because we're committed to baseball, we all expect to get a return on that investment. We built that big stadium to host regionals and super regionals and go to Omaha's and hang banner. That's why we did it. And so things have got to change. And they got to change immediately. We play Memphis tomorrow. I'll have a preview of that before we get out of here. And then we get South Carolina this weekend, who is really struggling. We always talk about it's a series we should win. Guys, we need to sweep them. Yeah, we need to sweep them. Just getting two out of three most weekends is not going to be enough for us. We got to pick up some sweeps along the way, and this needs to be one of them. And so we got to take it a game at a time. We can't get too far ahead of ourselves. Right now, the focus is Memphis, and then on Wednesday's show, we'll train our focus on South Carolina and look forward to bringing the Gamecocks back to Duty Noble Field. Hey, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of the show. I love Bulldog Burger Company. I will enjoy Bulldog Burger Company this week. I love eating there because I know that my expectations are going to be met, right? There is a consistency with the Bulldog Burger Company brand. You know, I've never been there where they, quote, had a bad night. You know, I know exactly what I'm going to get when I put my feet under their table. I'm going to have the spring rolls because I need all the help I can get to be better looking. You do too. Some of you don't. Some of you are just gorgeous. It's true. But it wouldn't hurt you to sharpen the edge a little bit. You know, we're all getting a little bit older. Have those spring rolls. Don't take any chances. But in addition to that, too, I know that when I get a great restaurant quality hamburger from there, that it is going to surpass my expectations. Sometimes I change it up and get the onion rings, but I do love the fries. Great portions there. You get more than you pay for at Bulldog Burger Company. Not many places you can say that about. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there, and Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Find your own favorites. I'm kind of on a pimentology add bacon kick. I don't even like pimento and cheese sandwiches, but I love the pimentology burger. I do. I can't explain it, but I love it. So whether you're on the way to town or you're in town, Bulldog Burger Company is the place for you. Get that chocolate shake to go. You'll be glad you did. You ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, let's take a brief look back at Saturday and Sunday. And then we'll get into top 10 lists. We'll talk about a few other things. Kind of look around the league, all that fun stuff. Not as much talk about these days. You know, we'll get spring football practice. We'll have availability on that tomorrow. We'll have Jeff Levy speak on Tuesday. And you guys get a chance to watch the video and read the transcript of everything he had to say. But nevertheless, we look back at the Friday game. And, you know, it's a game we should have won. I think everybody agrees it's a game we should have won. It's a 2-1 ball game. We had seven hits. They had seven hits. But we had every opportunity to win this game. And unfortunately, Pico takes his first loss in this game. Anthony Ians credited with the win. And he was really good. And he has not been good in SEC play. But he really gave us a lot of trouble with those breaking balls in, especially the left-handers. Guy was really good. So we were originally scheduled to begin at 6:30. We don't get started to 9:05. There was a lot of discussion about not even playing the game. I'm told that Jay Johnson himself, also with the endorsement of Chris Lemonis, kind of went and fought with his administrator there and said, hey, listen, we don't need – Mississippi State's willing to stay and play as long as we need to. They're in town to play a ball game. We want to play. They want to play. Let's wait this thing out. So we play at 9:05. And what a heck of a ball game it proved to be. Bulldogs go 1-2-3 in the first, as does LSU. And it was, you know, kind of shaping up to be the pitching duel we expected. In the second, State gets the first base runner on a Hunter Hines walk, and I think that's significant. I think the reason that you're seeing Hunter Hines kind of have a resurgence is because he is kind of willing to walk. Now, there are some people out there paying attention to him because they realize he's figured some things out mechanically. But he is more willing to take the walk. He's being a lot more selective. I think he's seeing the baseball a lot better. He tells me that he's changed his approach a little bit, just kind of getting in his legs a little bit more. We don't score him here, but I just want to make mention of that because there were some people very passionately that said we need to sit Hunter Hines, and right after that is when this hitting streak started. But he's your first base runner of the night. And then Pico gives up a solo shot on the third pitch of the second inning to make it a 1-0 ball game. Settles back down, strikes out the side. You and I both know one run wasn't going to be enough to win that ball game. Nobody's beating anybody 1-0. But we have a great opportunity to get even here in the third. Dylan Kopp, who is really playing well for us, doubles in the left center. And then we can't get him around. We have three chances to get him around. We don't even bunt here. Powell strikes out. Sanders strikes out. Sanders grounds out. Kopp takes third. And then Bryce Chance steps up with an opportunity here. You know, Bryce kind of built a brand on the two-out RBI base hit. Doesn't come through here. So we waste a leadoff double. And that came back to haunt us later. It did. Bottom of third, they get a one-out double. It was kind of a flukish thing, too. Stanfield just kind of pulled that ball on the left. It just, you know, it's one of those wild things. But Pico pitches around that. So it's still a one-nothing ball game headed to the fourth. And State gets even here. Reese singles to left, and then great at-bat by Noah Sullivan. He didn't have a great weekend, but he did have some great at-bats. This was one of them. He actually gets down 1-2 in this count, and he works it and works it and works it and works it, and ultimately gets the walk, which pushes Reese to second. Hunter Hines comes up, pulls it through the left side. Yeah, the left side. I guess technically he pushed it through the left side. But he singles the other way, and now the bases are loaded. And you start thinking about this. You know, base hit here, two runs are going to score. Things are going to be great. However, that's not what happens. It's a wild pitch after a mound visit, which allows everybody to move up. And now, again, situational hitting kind of fails us here. We're even, two runners in scoring position, and there's nobody out. So just give me a routine fly ball to right, a ground ball to second, and State has the lead. But we were unable to do it. We ended up striking out. Ianson just absolutely mows us down here. I mean, the game is on the line. This is the moment, right? Bases loaded, nobody out, and then he wild pitches a run in. So there's no force anywhere. I just need a productive out. But instead, we get three consecutive strikeouts. And so we leave 2 men in scoring position. You know what? That came back to haunt us. It did. Bottom of four, they get a leadoff single to left. And then what do you know? The same guy, Fry, hit the home run, grounds into a double play. And then we get Stephen Milan to pop up to first. So pretty efficient inning there for Pico. And again, it's a 1-1 ball game. You start thinking, here we are, right? Top of five, Powell strikes out swinging, and then Gat Sanders singles up the middle, and then Chance singles up, and Sanders takes third. Runners on the corners here. Again, a non-productive out here. You know, routine fly ball to right field gives State a lead. So, again, here we are for the third time with a runner on third with less than two outs, and we just need a productive out. Instead, Reese strikes out looking. Chance ends up taking second on a wild pitch, and Sullivan strikes out swinging. You know, so again, State, a chance to take the lead, and we don't. Sometimes you just got to do little things. You know, don't try to do too much. And one of the things just, you know, you got to spoil pitches every now and again too. But and listen, give Ianson some credit. The guy's really good. But just put a ball in play somewhere, right? All right, bottom of five. This is when the chickens kind of come home to roost. State's had every opportunity to get a lead and perhaps expand the lead here. And we get Pearson to ground out. And then Hernandez on a 2-0 pitch, homers down the left field line, makes it a 2-1 ball game. Broswell singles, and then Pico gets a couple punch outs to get out of it. So it's still a 2-1 ball game as we go to the sixth. And here we are. Hines walks on four pitches. And again, they're kind of pitching around him a little bit. Sawyer Reeves pinch hits for Stallman, gets the sack bunt down. Guess what, guys? Another runner in scoring position with less than two outs. Then Nolan Stevens strikes out swinging. Cup gets an infield hit. Hines takes third. So again, another runner to third here. Base hit here, and the game is at least tied. We pinch hit for Powell with Garrett Fry. Very first pitch, it's a ground out to second. They force a runner at short. And again, the tying run doesn't score. Bottom of six. 1-2-3 inning. Stone Simmons comes in, gets a 1-2-3 inning. Stone was outstanding. He was. Top of seven, State goes 1-2-3. Bottom of seven, OSU goes 1-2-3. Top of eight, here we go. And this is probably our best chance. This is our best chance of the many chances we had. This is probably our best chance to win the ballgame. A game that we, again, and give LSU credit for making some big pitches. But we're a big-time program, too, with big-time players. And you got to make big-time plays and big-time moments. We get a leadoff walk, four-pitch walk to Sullivan. They go out and have a mound visit. Hines, lengthy at bat, but strikes out swinging. O'Brien strikes out looking. And Zach Cowan's, yeah, great guy for them, but they proved they had some other arms too. Nolan Stevens had a tough night, and I give him a lot of credit here. He's trailing in this count 1-2. And what does he do? He takes it the other way. Shows some toughness. Gives us a chance here. And then Dylan Cup walks. The bases are loaded. And I'll be honest with you, at this moment, I was thinking, you know, we probably need Cup to get a hit here to give us a real chance. He ends up walking. So, again, bases are loaded. The tying runs at third. Go ahead, runs at second. And Highfield strikes out swinging. And I'm not going to be critical of Ross. There's one thing I want to say here. A couple things I'll say, really. Guys, Ross was hit in the face with a baseball Friday night at Oklahoma. A week later, he is back in the box and behind the dish. A week later. And I saw a few social media posts that, I'll be honest with you, really pissed me off. He's up there with a protective mask on. And people are saying, what's he doing playing softball? Ha, ha, ha. He got beamed in the face, brother. How would you feel? I suspect if you got beamed in the face, you'd never play baseball again. This guy loves Mississippi State. This guy loves his teammates. You don't have a right to criticize that young man. Not about that. You want to talk about the quality of play from time to time? Sure. But to suggest that he's somehow soft because he's wearing a protective mask after getting beamed in the face, you need to go see a doctor. It's ridiculous. Now, I got something I want to say here about this at bat, first at bat in a week. They kind of confused me a little bit. We take a first pitch breaker for a strike, and then we look at a fastball. It makes me wonder what we're looking for, right? Then we get the purpose pitch that we don't swing out. We strike out swinging the ball in the dirt. I'm not going to be too critical of Ross, but we got to have a better approach there. Got to have a better approach. If we're hunting a fastball, why are we taking a fastball? Right? That's my take. But no, we're not going to be critical of Ross Highfield. And I'll be honest with you, too. I'm a little disappointed in other people. I said, well, I don't want to get into a fight on Twitter, Steve. That's the only fight many people get into. But my point being is that this is our guy. He is our catcher. And yes, he's been up and down at times, but he is a Mississippi State Bulldog. And when you go out there and criticize a young man like this, who got beamed in the face last Friday and wanted to play on Saturday, and he goes, no, we got to let our doctors look at you. You know, we need our medical people to look at you before we clear you. It's for your own safety. He didn't want to miss any time. And a week later, he's back up there on the road at LSU in a bases-loaded situation trying to make a play for you. It's ridiculous, man. It's ridiculous. Nevertheless, we don't get the run home. Bottom of eight. LSU a chance to kind of expand the lead here. They get a couple singles around a strikeout. And Jones flies out to right, and we get Dickinson to fly out to left. So we go to the ninth again with a chance. Sanders flies out to center, and then Bryce grounds out to first unassisted. And everybody thinks this thing is over. And Ace Reese gets down 0-2 and works the count and works the count and works the count and gets the walk. And he kind of pimped the walk a little bit, kind of Scotty DeBrulish there. And it gives Sullivan a chance to come up. He gets behind an account, 1-2, it gets even, and he lets one loose to deep center field, and if it's daytime, it's a home run. But the look of anguish on that man's face when he realized that ball didn't get out was difficult to see. It shows you how much they care. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, this team has quit. You look at Noah Sullivan, look at his reaction when that ball was caught. A chance at the very least to tie the game. At best, to take a lead. So now I'm not going to listen to any of that. I'm not going to do it. So we lose the ball game 2-1. And a game we should have won. I mean, again, you go back and look at a box score here. You know, we talk about left on base and things like that. I mean, those are the things that kind of get next to you. You know, and how many did we leave on in scoring position? You know, it's crazy. When you think about it, truly is. it's just one of those things you look at, and it's just like, it's absolutely insanity here. We leave 12 on base. LSU leaves 4. So, yes, we had more than enough opportunities. But when you strike out 18 times, you're going to leave double-digit guys on base. It happens. We got to put a ball in play, guys. Simple as that. It's true. All right, let's get to game number 3. We're probably not going to spend as much time on this one. You ever Googled yourself? You may be alarmed to know exactly how much of your private information and data is out there for anybody to access. Whether it be your phone number, your home address, or details about your family. It could be your kids' names, their ages. Whether you agree to this disclosure or not. And that's because data brokers are collecting and selling your information to marketers, scammers, and basically anyone willing to pay. It's the reason robocallers know your name, and while ads seem to follow you on every digital platform out there. Well, Aura fights back for you. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a data breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just data broker removal. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep all your logins safe, and they even give you spam call protection to cut off those stupid scammers. Aura also scans the dark web regularly for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, passwords, and they will notify you instantly if you are somehow exposed. If your identity is ever stolen, you're backed up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support to help you recover everything quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all. Data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all with one simple app. Aura removes what is already exposed, protects what isn't, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That gives them plenty of time to go ahead and start protecting your data. They can remove your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are all safeguarded. That's Aura, aura.com/remove. Certain terms and conditions apply. Be sure and check it out today at aura.com.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
There wasn't as much to feel good about, but ballgame starts at 9:35. I learned a little bit this time too, you know. So new rules. We have to start no later than 11:59. And I was under the belief we had to be finished by 11:59. And of course, that some things came into play with the getaway day clock in other games. We'll get there a little bit later. But, yeah, we were done about 2 o'clock. Around the time that the bars were closing, we were leaving Alex Box Stadium. And it is Alex Box Stadium, too. And a lot of people in South Louisiana call it Alex Box Stadium. That's because they call Alexandria Alec. You know, and so there's a little bit of a confusion there. But it's so interesting. I'm sitting on press row with Jason Crowder and Wyatt. And did pregame with those guys. You know, we got down 1-2-3, and in the bottom of first, you know, Correll comes up, and I'm going to tell you guys, this Correll kid at LSU, leadoff hitter, left fielder, that kid's he is an assassin with the bat. That kid is really, really good. He's like Jake Mangum, dare I say it. You know, he's a guy that can work both sides of the field and hit them where they ain't, got a little bit of pop, he needs it. Kid's really, really good. Really good. Singles to center, and as he steps up, as Bear Jones stepped up, I turned to Jason Crowder. I said, this is the matchup that worries me the most for Carson Ligon. I mean, Jones is a dude. He's a great fastball hitter. And I said, you know what, Liggins, a guy that'll try to get ahead with a fastball against a guy that's pretty lethal. And sure enough, the second pitch ends up being a souvenir in the center field. Then we plunk Dickinson. Then it's a double, and then a single, and then they reach on a fielder's choice, and then it's a line out to second. You think we're going to get a chance to get out of this thing? It's 4-0. Can we just get out of here, right? Can we just get out of here? No. Reeves and singles to short, and it was just one of those balls deep in the six hole, and we just couldn't make a play. And then Stanfield singles, and then Curiel singles again. Now it's 6-0. We go get Ben Davis, and it's an infield hit. You know, it's like we're getting some ground balls and we can't get outs. And next thing you know, you look up, it's 8-0. 8-0. And I go back to this whole first and third defensive thing. And again, there's so many people, everybody thinks you're a coach. And I'm going to explain this as easily as I can. Okay, so when there are runners at first and third, the catcher, you may have seen this before and not know what was going on. The catcher will walk out in front of the plate and he'll make some signals. There's a couple things we're doing there. We're conveying the bunt defense and the first and third defense. And many casual fans have no idea that there is a first and third defense. It's, again, I discussed it on the show Friday. It's what do we do in the event the runner goes from first? Do we not throw through? Do we try to get the guy at third? There's a lot to it. And so many people are like, oh, no, Steve, you're wrong about that. Well, okay, so we ran it your way. And we didn't run it this way. I think we got beat here. I think we snuffed it out on Thursday. We just didn't get a call on a review, and it was the right call. I'm not in any way disputing that. The guy scored. But in this situation here, we didn't throw home because I think we got caught a little bit unaware. And what do? We have to go get the runner from between first and second, and the run scores anyway. And you know what? If we tried to tag the guy on Thursday night, the run would have scored anyway. So, you know, again, what you're saying is just simply incorrect because what the runner did on Saturday is the same thing the runner would have done on Thursday if we tried to tag him. He's not giving himself up. He's giving you the appearance that he's giving himself up to get you to go get him, and he's going to run back to give the guy from third a chance to score. That's how the game is played. And so, again, the next time that the catcher walks out in front of the plate in a first and third situation, you probably just never paid any attention to it before because you didn't know what was happening. They're calling a play. They're alerting the rest of the infield, here's what we're doing if the runner from first tries to steal second. That's the communication. And we got caught here. So we get beat on what we call the U-trip play. That's what everybody calls it, the U-trip play. We got beat on it twice. And I think we should probably run a little more off. Mangione runs it a lot too. But it's 8-0. At this point, the game's over. It is. Now, I understand we did some big things here in a second. But, guys, this ball game was over. Sullivan goes down swinging, and then Hines murders the ball to left center. I think 107 miles per hour to left center. And, again, many of you wanted him to sit. Downs and singles up the middle. Stevens gets a single. They go get a mound visit, and then Heifel's hit by the pitch. The same guy that got beamed in the face, and some people are making fun of him like he's a softball player for wearing that mask. And then Cup rips a ball to left field, clears the bases. Guys, it's an 8-4 ball game, and all of a sudden I'm starting thinking there's plenty of innings left for us to make a run here. We got to get somebody to give us a hold. We got to find somebody here to get some outs for us, and maybe it's Ben Davis. Well, then Reeves grounds out, Chance grounds out. So it's an 8-4 ball game. So you're down four runs in the second. That's not insurmountable by any stretch. We give one of the runs back there in the bottom of the second. You know, they get a single, foul out, strikeout, wild pitch, single back up the middle, single to left, run scores. You know, we give the run back. But still, it's only a 5-run ball game. Nothing really going for us in the third, bottom of third, not much going for LSU. We do have the one walk there. And again, Ben Davis is kind of holding the game where it is. Top of four, we get a leadoff walk, and then we don't do anything with it, right? We end up getting two hits in the inning, and nothing really happens here. You know. But again, we're putting the ball in play. Bottom of four, nothing really going for LSU. They get a one-out single. We work around that. Top of five, we get a one-out walk. And then with two outs, Downs walks again. So there's, again, two runners on, and then Stevens flies out on a 2-0 count. I mean, that's the thing. And to be honest with you, I'm having him take there, okay? They brought in Ware for Chase Shores. I mean, Shores took that comebacker to the eye. Again, if you read the article, I had a chance to visit with him postgame. He's going to be fine. But I thought it was pretty tough for him to stay in the game. But, you know, Ware comes in and struggles to find the zone here. But when he's walked two of the last three hitters and it's a 2-0 count, and I'm going to take my chances and I'm going to take on 2-0. And I'm going to instruct the hitter to do that because he had just walked Aaron Downs on four straight pitches. And he'd gotten behind Hunter Hines 2-0-2. You know what I mean? So it's like he had really struggled to throw strikes. This is one of those things, and I would do things differently. And you never know what's going to happen, right? He may just throw a strike right in the middle of the plate. But if you got a pitcher that's struggling, you don't want to help him. We end up flying out to left. And you're just trying to hold the game where it is. And we give up a leadoff walk and then a single. And so we make the move here. You know, instead of giving him a third hitter, we bring in Dotson for Davis. We get a fly out, a single, then gets to the left side. And Aaron Downs comes up and throws the runner out at the plate. And it was not even close. It was not even close. And it's so, like, I don't like, the spirit of the replay is not always being followed. It's like we're just trying to, we didn't see anything, we're just hoping we see something. Guys, he was out 5 feet. And then they're like, oh, well, I think there was, you know, I think he blocked the plate. Well, when I have the ball, I can block the plate. It's stupid, man. Every bit of it. Every bit of it. But he was out. And so, again, you think, okay, maybe we're about to get out of this. And what do you know, a two-out double from Dickinson makes it 11-4 ball game. So everything, all the ground we had made up, we've lost here. Now they keep trying to give it back to us. You know, they keep bringing in relievers who can't throw strikes. They hit Heifel on a pitch, then Cup singles to left. Sanders strikes out looking, and he gets ahead 3-0 in this count. I thought it was a borderline pitch, but it's too close to take in a full count situation. I mean, at least spoil the pitch, right? Chance then flies out to right, short. Short fly to right. We tag and send Heifel. And then, again, we got to review all this stuff again. We got to review it again. It's all so incredibly stupid, right? And so we're going to, okay, and that's the thing, too. We're going to review everything. Did he really tag? Yes. Oh, well, we want to check for malicious contact, too. Yeah. Do you want to check for your catcher blocking the bag without the ball? Do you want to check that, too? You can't block home plate without the ball. You can get into position to receive the ball, but you cannot impede the runner's progress without the ball in college baseball. Those are the rules. Well, of course the call is confirmed. It's so stupid. Not to mention, you know, it's an 11-5 ball game. Well, then Reese walks and Sullivan pops out. But again, we're down six, but you start thinking, maybe if we can just kind of hold it where it is, but we couldn't. We give up two runs there in the sixth, top of seven. We get a couple back. You know, again, they're just kind of running through pitchers. They bring in Primo, who walks Hines and then hits Aaron Downs. He threw six pitches, and none of them were for strikes, and they went out and got him and brought in Connor Binge. And knowing Stevens doubles, couple runs score. And so now we're down six. Heifel walks, still second. So here we are, you know, a couple runners on, you know, it's, you know, Stevens is on third with a wild pitch. Highfield's at second. And then Cup strikes out swinging. Lengthy at bat there, but strikes out swinging and probably swung at ball four on the foul ball, not on the swing and miss. Bringing Garrick Fry, he flies out to left. We tag the runners. It's 13-8, so it's a five-run game going to the seventh. And again, we just can't stop them from scoring. And give LSU credit for their relentless offense. But a lot of this was us, right? A lot of, you know, you go out there and walk guys to open innings, that's what's going to happen. They tack on a run here in the seventh. In the eighth, not much going for us, even though they hit us. It's like we the first two guys get on. We get Reese's hit by the pitch by Williams. They bring in Newt and then Sullivan singles. So, again, two men on, nobody out. We get a fly out to center, and then we grind into a double play. You know, and again, six runs, but it feels like it's insurmountable. And then LSU just kind of puts their foot on the gas there in the eighth. And I saw some social media commentary. People were kind of upset about this. guys, they're trying to get the game over. I got no qualm with what they're doing. It's our job to get them out. But they're just trying to get the game over, right? Because, hey, you score 18 and they got 8, the game is over. And they came up short, right? We ended up making them play the full 9. What a small, the most modest victory ever, right? That you force them to play the 9th inning. And that's it. You get out of it. But anyway, we lose. And it sucks, man. And we get out of there about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I think so much of Mississippi State baseball, like these are, I mean, listen, it's tough to go to LSU and win, even though we've done that recently. Matter of fact, I don't think anybody's ever won more games in Baton Rouge against LSU than we have. And so I don't think it's too much to ask to go down there and get one. And again, you should have won on Thursday. You should have won on Friday. And again, you have that one come apart inning. Whenever Pico doesn't pitch, I always expect there's going to be one inning that we melt down. And sometimes it's because we can't make a play defensively. Other times it's because we can't find the zone. But to lose that ball game 2-1 on Friday really sticks in the crawl. I mean, it really, really does. Because we actually played really well. And we had runners in scoring position. But we just simply couldn't get them home. And so that's where this thing sits. And I'll have some more comments about Mississippi State baseball before we get out of here. But as I shared yesterday in that article, like LSU is a team that I want to beat the most. And it's not because I hate LSU. I respect LSU. And when we beat them, to me, it validates, hey, this is a legit team. When you can go take a series from LSU at home or away, we're a good team. And it gives us a lot of confidence. And you look at this and say, well, we got swept. You know, I can look at this and say, well, a couple of those games we should have won. But at the end of the day, we got swept, and that's all that matters. Nobody puts in the record books, well, played pretty well, played really well, had a bad break. No, you win or you lose. And we got to win more, period. We have to win more. So before we get to our top 10 list, we're going to go with our Bulldog of the Weekend, brought to you by closewithblair.com. And that's C-L-O-S-E, withblair.com. Blair is my friend, your friend, in the mortgage industry. If you're looking for your next home, your first home, or your retirement home, look no further than Blair Chandler. I think it's one of those things, too, that I like to keep business in the family whenever we can. You know, that's how I feel. You may see it a little bit differently, but that's how I feel. Let me give you Blair's number just between us girls here. Blair can construct your loan in a way that gives you the best chance to get an approval. He will be your advocate with underwriting. Phone number, 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. Get his expertise and know-how working for you to help the dream of home ownership be a reality and not just a dream. Okay, so we're going to go our player of the weekend. I'm going to give it to Hunter Hines. And you say, but Steve, no. But you, yes. So here's the thing, guys. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8-game hitting streak now. 8-game hitting streak. On Thursday, in a big ball game, he goes 2-for-3 with an RBI and a couple runs scored. On Friday, 1-for-2, and then they walk him a couple times. In the middle of all this, too, again, I mentioned he's walking more. In the last 4 ball games, he's walked 6 times. In the Saturday game, he goes 1-for-3, scores a couple of runs, and also has an RBI. So, you know, he's been a big part of things. And I think, again, you reward the fact, too, that he has figured some things out. The batting average now is over 300. And just recently, it was one guy that was like, I can't believe you guys are predicting before the year that he may hit 300 or better. A lot of season left, but he's hitting 306. Yeah, it's true. He got down to, he was around, I don't know, it's 256. Going into the Oklahoma series, he was hitting 250, or that's after the first game, hitting 256. So before the hitting streak, he's hitting 256. He has raised his average 50 points in the last 8 games. Yeah, that's pretty good, right? And so maybe we're starting to see Hunter Hines kind of come out of this funk. You know, and listen, there was a stretch last year, too, where you couldn't pitch to him. But he's starting to kind of get some things going. Got 6 home runs this year. Yeah. I mean, it's we expect him to be a double-digit home run guy. We're hoping he'd get to 20 or so. I don't know if he will. But I think him hitting fifth has kind of allowed the pressure to come off a little bit. But also, too, I think we're seeing him just kind of relax. Even though the team maybe isn't winning the way it is, I don't think Hunter is feeling the pressure of trying to do too much. And again, that home run the other way is a very, very good sign. So congratulations, Hunter Hines, our Close with Blair player of the weekend. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by Kalito Guitars. That's right, Kalito Guitars. Very proud to partner with them. Guys, this is a Mississippi State-owned and operated guitar shop. They're in Lake Jackson, Texas. They've done a lot of great things, helped a lot of great musicians. They can help you and your player, too. And it's not just if you're looking for an instrument, which I think look no further, right? They have a great selection, exemplary customer service, and expertise that is unsurpassed. Guys, they sell these great guitars. Premium soundwoods include spruce, cypress, mahogany, rosewood, superb fit, and finish. Everything you need to just be ready to go, right? And everybody needs a new guitar. And even if you don't need a new guitar, you want a new guitar. So we're going to encourage you to visit our friends at KalitoGuitars.com, Kalido Guitars. .com or call 979-297-4733. And even if you don't need a guitar, maybe you need some accessories. We need gig bags or strings. Or I just got my guitar stand in while I was out in Baton Rouge. Hadn't had a chance to put it together yet, but I'll give you guys a review on Wednesday. I'm super stoked about this. But here's the thing. We're going to give you some incentive to give your guitar business to Kalito Guitars. Use the coupon code BSR. You know what that is, beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you a 10% discount on your purchase, free shipping, no sales tax unless you live in the state of Texas. In addition to that, 5% of your purchase will be donated to the Bulldog Initiative / Bulldog Excellence Fund. How super cool is that? Even if they didn't do any of that, it's worth your time and effort because they're a great business. But they're also Bulldogs, and they're Bulldogs giving back. Why would you want to shop anywhere else? Again, Kalito Guitars, 979-297-4733. Be sure and check it out today. And even if you're just window shopping today, go check out the website and see the incredible selection that they have for you, for sure. Okay, so guitars are part of rock, and I jammed some 90s stuff when I was down in Red Stick. And I kind of got to thinking about this. And there's some 90s bands that have been in the news here as of late. Billy Corgan just put a new solo band together. They're going to go out and celebrate those first three Smashing Pumpkins records. Billy and some Hired Guns. That'll be super cool. There's been talk about a Silverchair reunion, but lead singer says, nope, not interested in doing that. But it got me to thinking, you know, about some of those bands. And we talk about what a great year in music like 84 and 85 was. 95 was a great year, too. A lot of people mentioned 91, what a great year that was. 92, people, oh, yeah, it was great. You know, there's great albums every year until you get to like the early 2000s. And then it kind of gets pretty bland. I mean, I'm just saying it for what it is. But we had some great music in the mid-90s. And so there's some bands that didn't make our list on today, right? And I wanted to throw a few of those out there, like kind of as an honorable mention, I guess we could say. Some albums that didn't make our list. Change of Seasons from Dream Theater. One Hot Minute from Red Hot Chili Peppers. Stompful 42 from Anthrax. That's the last of the John Bush albums. Great. Lenny Kravitz's Circus album, which is a great album. I love it. I do, didn't make our list. Bon Jovi's These Days also didn't make the list. And neither did Ozzy's Osmosis. And some of you are going to say, but Steve, I just kind of wanted to stick with the 90s theme, bands from that era. So here we go. Top rock albums, and I'll give you a song off each of them. And some of these are legendary. Top rock albums from 1995. So these albums are turning 30 this year. So we're going to go with Silverchair's Frog Stomp as our number 10 album. And we're going to go with, of course, what else would we do? The song Tomorrow. They were not a one-hit wonder, but they're kind of billed as such. And there were some people who were like, hey, this guy's kind of a young Kurt Cobain. There was no comparison whatsoever. Other than the fact they both played guitar, sang, and had blonde hair. There was no really comparison. And it's not a fair comparison either, to be honest with you. But no, they were not in any way similar. Number nine, I love this album. Many of you did too. And it was like there was a kind of a change in music. And I really like this band. And I thought, you know what, these guys maybe have figured some things out here. And maybe they've cracked the code for the mid-90s. It didn't last, but they did have some bigger hits later. But it's Filter's debut album, Short Bus, and the track, Hey Man, Nice Shot. That's your number nine track today. Number eight, I don't travel anywhere without Kenny Wayne Shepherd. I don't. I listen to Kenny Wayne Shepherd probably an alarming amount of the time. You know, I listen to Dateline podcast, but sometimes I just like to put on the blues and just kind of enjoy that. And Kenny Wayne Shepherd is my favorite modern-day blues artist. I love everything Kenny Wayne Shepherd's ever done. And that's one thing I would encourage you to do, too. If you like some of the early stuff, just put on a more recent album that you're maybe unfamiliar with and just ride that ride home, man. I mean, I think you'd really dig it. But I'm going back to where it all began with Kenny Wayne Shepherd. It's Ledbetter Heights, which is named after a neighborhood not too far from where he grew up in Shreveport. He's from Blanchard, Louisiana. But Ledbetter Heights, that's a name of a neighborhood there. And we're going to go with that debut track. It's Deja Voodoo. Great track. I do love Aberdeen. I love Aberdeen, too. And it's one of those songs, too. Like, it doesn't sound like anything from this era. It sounds like something that should have come out much earlier. But Aberdeen, if you're from Deantown, or if you've known an Aberdeen woman, that's what the song's about, those Aberdeen women, this is the track for you. All right, number seven. This is a huge album, huge. It wasn't really my thing. I did see them in concert with the Goo Goo Dolls and Bush, which reminds me, A Boy Named Goo didn't make our list today. Another good album. Just, I mean, considering the quality of the albums that are represented, they just missed. It's just a great year of music again. But it's No Doubt. And the Tragic Kingdom album, it was their third album, but it was really kind of their breakthrough. They were a ska band. And they still had some elements of that in Tragic Kingdom, but they really became kind of more of a pop band as Gwen Stefani became very much a big part of popular culture. Extremely talented, extremely beautiful. Of course, she married Gavin Rossdale for a while from Bush. Pretty cool stuff. But we're going to go with Spiderwebs. I know many of you, your gateway track was I'm Just a Girl. And, of course, Don't Speak was a huge hit. But Spiderwebs, to me, is the one that on this album that kind of shimmers. Number six. I think this was the last album that I bought before Ani was born. I remember jamming this when he was very, very little. And I absolutely love this album. And, of course, I love the debut to White Zombies, Astro Creep 2000. And we're going to go with More Human Than Human. There are some X-rated sounds on this one, too. So maybe you don't want to play those with the kids in the car. But the language itself is just okay. You know, it's good. But there's just a Nine Inch Nails industrial type vibe in the background of this one. And so it kind of combines two of my favorite things, kind of a reverent rock and then, you know, with some industrial sound too. I think it's super cool. Number five, a band that you guys got to know with their hints, allegations, and things left unsaid. Debut record and the great song Shine. It's Collective Soul. Their second album was a self-titled album, and the lead track, the first single on an album that had four or five hits, was a great song called Gel. And I love the guitar tone on this. I love the way it opens up with kind of that muffled, amplified guitar, and then next thing you know, the bass and drum kicks in, and then we're gonna go. Let's mingle, let's gel. All right, number four, debut album from the Foo Fighters. Really dug this album. I still listen to this album. I know many of you do as well. I contend that the only great thing that came out of Nirvana was the Foo Fighters. I know Dave Grohl is not a very popular name these days because of some poor decisions that he's made in his personal life. But we're not judging, nor should we. For all of us have fallen short. We're going to go with I'll Stick Around, which is a song about Courtney Love, because there was a lot of angst and acrimony, number one, within the band, of Nirvana that some people, again, they've just romanced so much of that that's just simply not true about Nirvana and about their place in Seattle and all that kind of stuff. You know, all of that stuff was big. But he wrote the song basically letting Courtney Love know, I'm not going anywhere. You know, yeah, Nirvana may be over, but I'm not going anywhere. I'll stick around. Number three, one of the best albums of the decade, not just the year, but one of the best albums of the decade. And really, you could make the case for maybe most of the albums on our list today, but it's Oasis' Morning Glory. Now, Definitely Maybe was great, but the guys in Oasis took a huge step forward with What's the Story, Morning Glory. Love this album. Many of you know it from Wonderwall and things of that nature, and Don't Look Back in Anger, but we're going to go with Champagne Supernova today. My son Ian recently found that song and kind of has been turned on to Oasis. I think it's super cool. Of course, you can find him waiting tables at Bulldog Burger Company as he makes his way through school. But Champagne Supernova, that's your number three track today. Number two, Alice in Chains. It was kind of it's kind of the end of the end, right? Or maybe the beginning of the end. They kind of recorded this album and kind of rushed it in some respects because, you know, Lane Staley was in really bad shape at the time. And, you know, with Jerry doing Boggy Depot, you know, there was a lot of, like, chatter about, you know, that's why they did Mad Season. You know, Mike McCready and those guys from Pearl Jam kind of put that project together to kind of give Lane something to do rather than sit around and, you know, feel sorry for himself. He needed something to do while Jerry was out supporting his own record. And everybody was involved in something, right? Sean Kenny was, you know, back and forth in treatment dealing with alcoholism. And Mike Inez was working with Slash on the It's 5 O'Clock Somewhere album. There was just a lot going on that pulled other members of Alice in Chains away from Lane. And so they eventually kind of got back in the studio and put this thing together and put it out there. But it's so interesting. You know, even when I go back and listen to this, to me, there's some parts of it that just kind of feel disjointed. That's how I see it. And maybe you see it differently. And I think, again, you know, blessed with the gift of hindsight, you know, we kind of look back at that and it's like, you know what, this is just, it's just not working. You know, they're just, it's the beginning of the end in every aspect, you know. And, you know, people forget, you know, the Sap EP, which is super cool, that came out between Facelift and Dirt. But Alice in Chains, the self-titled album of 95, was the last album with the Alice in Chains classic lineup. And again, I honestly, I think of the first three albums that it is the worst one. And I think that reflects, you know, kind of the space that the band and certainly Lane Staley were in. But we're going to go with the great track Again off the Alice in Chains self-titled album. Some people refer to it as the tripod album because it has a three-legged dog on the front. But number one, I think the best album from 1995, it's got to be the Pet Shop Boys. No, it's not the Pet Shop Boys. It's Smashing Pumpkins, the double album, Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness. I think it's a masterpiece. I remember the very first time that I heard this album. Of course, I love Gish. I love it, man. That was some happy days in Hattiesburg when Gish came out. And it just felt like they were everywhere. And then, of course, Siamese Dream came out. And you're like, okay, these guys are for real. They got some real staying power. They took a big jump as a band. And the very first time that I went through this album, I first listened through Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness. I remember calling Dana and said, man, Billy Corgan is back and he's really pissed. And the song that jumped out to me the first listen through is one that I think is probably the quintessential Smashing Pumpkins song, and it's Bullet with Butterfly Wings, because despite all my rage, I am still just a rat in a cage, right? You everybody knows it. And it's like when you put that song on, it sounds so good in a car sonically, but there is an authenticity in the lyrics and the vocal delivery of that song. I believed every word. I believed that Billy Corgan was singing and sharing his pain with all of us in a very anthemic form, that it was very unifying for people. And of course, that album, so many great hits. Like, I really believe that this album is the one that really solidified Smashing Pumpkins as kind of a legendary band from the era. There were a lot of bands out there, you know, they had a couple hits, you know, and, you know, we fall in love with that kind of stuff. But, you know, man, look at numbers here. The very first week, The Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness came out, sold 250,000 copies. The first week, man. And, of course, you got 1979 and Zero, which is one of my favorites. Tonight, there's just so many great songs on here. And there's a lot of deeper cuts, too. And maybe that's an idea for us another day, is the deep cut Smashing Pumpkins songs. Maybe we come back and do that on Wednesday. Because there's so many songs that weren't singles that really kind of sustained the span. And that's why they've had such staying power. There's not a lot of filler on the records. So those are my feelings. Number one album from 1995 on the rock side. Smashing Pumpkins, Melancholy and Infinite Sadness. And, of course, the classic Bullet with Butterfly Wings. And Young Bucks, if you don't know that song, and if you've only heard it like in reels or whatever, you owe it to yourself to put it on in your car when you're driving down the highway. Set the cruise first, because it's going to make you hit the gas. But it's one of those songs that I think just kind of stands alone. And I think if you were ever to, like, hey, I want to introduce you to Smashing Pumpkins, I think this is the way you go. Now, many of you would want to ease people in, right, and play 1979 or, you know, play Disarm or something like that. And I get that, but I'm not a delicate flower. I want to rock, and this is a great rock song. And it has stood the test of time, now 30 years old, and now, again, Billy's about to go out and celebrate those first three albums. And if he comes close, maybe we should all get together and go see the show. How about that? If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out and let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti, my friend, on Twitter, or X, whatever you're calling it these days, at Dogmatic67, DawgMatic67. You can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. You need to be using Campus Bookmart for your Mississippi State merchandising needs. Best selection of Mississippi State merchandise in and on universe. Go by and see their smiling faces next time you're in town. Very easy to get to. Just turn off 182 at the Trooper Station and follow it around and just mosey on up there towards campus. On the left-hand side, just before you get to campus, there's Campus Bookmart, neatly positioned there for you. If you can't make it to town, we'd love for you to still support a Starkville business by visiting them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. Use promo code BSR to get free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. Diploma frames, yeah, be thinking about that. But also, to buy yourself something, too, you need a new Mississippi State shirt. You do. Whether it's a T-shirt, a polo, whatever, you can find it at campusbookmart.net. Okay, interesting weekend in the SEC, and it always tends to be, right? Just kind of going back and looking. And we'll give you a summary, you know, of kind of how things went. But, you know, you had the Thursday series. You know how our games went. And then Ole Miss beats Florida. Ole Miss kind of catches Florida at the perfect time, too. Florida really, really beat up right now. Hunter Elliott advances his record to 5-0 on the year. Goes 5 2/3, allows just 3 earned runs, 7 Ks in the ballgame. They take game one of that series. And then we get into Friday. The Rebels ended up having an opportunity to clinch the series. They do a 10-9 win there in game two, as we get a dog situated there. But yeah, 10-9 winners as Ole Miss scores 3 in the ninth to pull victory from the jaws of defeat. Yeah, how about that? Mitchell Sanford, 3 for 5 in a ball game, 2 home runs. Yeah, it's a guy that Mississippi State was recruiting last year, too. Former LSU Tiger by way of UNO. Georgia gets Auburn 4-1. Matchup of top 11 teams. Georgia third at the time, Auburn 11. But Georgia gets the first one 4-1. Auburn doesn't score until the ninth there. Slater offered 2 for 4 in the ballgame. South Carolina opens up against Tennessee. Of course, you can't really judge anybody playing against Tennessee. They're just at a different level right now. That's a level that I want to be. That's where I want to be. I want everybody to say, you know what? Hey, I'm going to go watch the game, but I'm going to see Mississippi State play. But yeah, Tennessee jumps all over from a 6-2 lead early on. They tack on 4 there in the fifth to pretty much put the game away. South Carolina with a couple of runs there in the sixth and the ninth. But Tennessee wins it 11-7. Liam Dole advances his record to 4-1 on the year. Ethan Petrie, who is the best player at South Carolina, goes 4-for-5 in the ballgame with a home run. Texas A&M wins the opener against Kentucky, 9-7. Ended up being a very contentious ending to this series. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But early on in this ballgame, it looked like Kentucky was going to put it away. Guys, it was 6-1 in favor of the Wildcats after three complete. But Kentucky, 1 in the 4th, and then A&M puts up 2, and then 5 there in the 5th to take the lead. They tack on an insurance run there in the 6th and win 9-7. Jace Laviolette, 2-for-4 in the ballgame. Luke Lawrence from Kentucky, 2-for-5. We'll see them here in a few weeks. Texas all over Missouri. Missouri, again, I told you guys at the beginning of the year, I didn't know if they'd win 6 conference games. They may not win any. Texas gets them 15-4 in 7 innings. Jared Spencer, you know, they got a no decision against us. 3-1 now on the year. Goes 5 2/3 of an inning. Will Gasparino, your SEC player of the week, hits a couple home runs in that game. Alabama hosting Oklahoma. We know Oklahoma's a really good team. We don't think they're great, but they're really good. 8-6 winners is Alabama as they score 3 runs in the 8th. Yeah, Oklahoma was on the verge of putting this thing away. They score 2 there in the 8th to make it a 6-5 game. Excuse me, a 6-5 game. They have the lead going in the bottom of the 8th, and Alabama with 3 there and then 3 outs there in the 9th to put the thing away. They win 8-6. Arkansas all over Vanderbilt, and I had one of the listeners of the show reached out and told me they covered this. You know, they were part of the stats crew there at Vanderbilt and talked about how great the Arkansas lineup looked. I think that's true, but I also think it's got a little bit something to do with Vanderbilt. I think pretty much what we've seen from Vanderbilt the last 2 years is what we're going to see from Vanderbilt moving forward. I think NIL will eventually push Tim Corbin to retire. The advantages of need-based aid have been mitigated by the emergence of NIL. And I think, again, now that Vanderbilt has a level playing field, and they may not like me to say this, I think Vanderbilt has come back to the pack, and I think the glory days of Commodore baseball are over. Arkansas, 9-0 winners. Vanderbilt, just 3 hits in the ballgame. Zach Root, your SEC pitcher of the week, advances his record to 4-1, works into the 8th inning in this ballgame, too. Cam Koziel, first baseman for Arkansas, got it DH a little bit for him last year. A couple home runs in the game. 3-for-5, fire RBI. Florida comes back to salvage a game and to avoid being 0-9 in the SEC. They get Ole Miss in game 3 with 5 runs in the 9th to win it 11-8. That Ole Miss bullpen, I'm telling you, is going to be an adventure. And I think they've had an easier part of the schedule to kind of start this thing. And listen, I get it. They're in the top 10 now. I'm not going to knock the fact that they've made a nice comeback. But I think they've also benefited from a very light SEC schedule. Luke Hill for Ole Miss goes 3-for-5 in the game. But Luke Heyman, the catcher from Florida, 3-for-4, 4 RBI, a couple of bombs. Yeah, 5 in the 9th. How nuts is that? Grand Slam was a part of that. So then you get into Sunday's action, and of course, not as much, or excuse me, Saturday. The Ole Miss series obviously wraps up early, and Georgia, 11-7 winners over Auburn, and most of the scoring came in the middle innings. The two teams combined for 15 runs between the 5th and the 6th, and Georgia wins it 11-7 to take the series. Oklahoma bounces back and wins 6-5 with 2 in the 9th, and they hold off a late rally from Alabama to win 6-5. Bryce Fowler, guy from Mississippi, 3-for-4 in the ballgame. And good for him. Kentucky gets game 2 from Texas A&M. Wild one, 14-11. And 3 in the 8th for Kentucky kind of proved to be the difference. A&M scores 1 there in the 9th to make it interesting, but 25 runs in the game. Bear Harrison, catcher from A&M, 4-for-5 in the game with 4 RBI. Texas and Missouri, Texas takes it. 7-4, an interesting ball game. Missouri takes a 4-2 lead against Texas there in the 2nd, and then from there it was all Longhorns as they cruise to a 7-4 win. 5 errors committed in the game. Not everybody's playing clean. Arkansas takes the series. Took them 10 innings to win game 2, but in Nashville they do take it 6-4. 3 runs in the 10th for the Razorbacks. Arkansas with 1 in the bottom half there. But it's a 3-3 game headed to the 10th, and then a lot of scoring there in the 10th. Again, as Arkansas takes the series. Georgia, 9-6 winners in 10 innings. Wild one, two. Goes extras. Auburn scores two in the 10th to put themselves in a position to take a win. And then Georgia, five runs to put that thing away. 9-6. Pretty crazy thing there. Yeah, for sure. Tennessee, of course, 7-5 winners over South Carolina. You'd say you'd expect more gaudy scores, but it really never looked like that Tennessee was ever in jeopardy here. They get up 3-0, and then it's tied after five, and from there, you know, they just kind of piecemeal this thing along, and they take it 7-5, and then Texas wins 7-1 to wrap up that series. It's always so interesting to me to kind of see how everybody else, you know, it's true. Tennessee, 7-2 winners over South Carolina to complete the sweep. The Gamecocks are now 17-12 overall and 1-8 in SEC play. Tennessee, your number one team in the country, now 26-2, 8-1 on the season. Alabama rallies to take the series from Oklahoma. Oklahoma tried to make it interesting late. It was an 8-2 ball game in the seventh. Oklahoma with two in the seventh, two in the eighth, to get within striking distance, but just could not close out the deal. Jackson Willits, the very talented shortstop for the Sooners, 2-for-4 in the ballgame. And Will Hodo, a native of Mississippi, 2-for-4 with a solo home run. Arkansas completes the sweep over Vanderbilt, 7-3. The big inning, 5 there in the 8th. Very interesting game. Vanderbilt was 3-2, headed to the 8th, and the Razorbacks put up 7 runs. Jonathan Vastein, the shortstop for Vanderbilt, who I think was the best player on that squad last year. A lot of people, I don't know that he's fully appreciated. He goes 4-for-4 for the Commodores in the loss. And then Kentucky, 10-5 winners in a game that only went 8 innings. As Nick Mangione kind of ran out the clock there in the 8th, there was a curfew. And a lot of people are upset about that. But let me tell you guys this, there are no 5-run home runs in college baseball. It just doesn't happen that way. And the rules are the rules, right? Some people didn't like it. Some people are like, hey, you shouldn't do this. But you know what? You give up 10 runs. Guys, it's 10-5 in the 8th. I know stranger things have happened, but it's 10-5 in the 8th. There's nobody on and two outs in the 8th. And there's like 2 minutes to go before curfew. And then Nick and those guys kind of drag their feet a little bit. And people say, I think it's kind of Bush League. Yeah, well, then petition to change the rules. Right? I mean, just like an LSU is trying to put a mercy ruling on us, I mean, I've got no qualms with somebody trying to get the game over. I mean, guys, Kentucky's trying to win a series on the road in the SEC, and they do 10-5. And again, I'm sure Kentucky feels like they should have swept. A&M now 13-14 overall and 1-8 in the conference. Kentucky now 4-5 in the conference. So again, kind of looking back at your series winners, Florida loses 2 to Ole Miss. Of course, LSU sweeps State. Georgia sweeps Auburn. Alabama takes 2 of 3 from Oklahoma in a very, very competitive series. Tennessee sweeps South Carolina. Texas sweeps Missouri. And again, Kentucky, 2-1 winners at Texas A&M. And then Arkansas sweeps Vanderbilt. So 5 of the 8 series by way of sweep. And kind of looking ahead here, you know, kind of see, you know what's next in the SEC. It'll be a pretty busy night on Tuesday, April Fool's Day, so be wary of that, Bulldog fans, tomorrow, as there are some people out there that will try to get your goat with an April Fool's prank. I'm not one of them. I'm going to cover a ball game. Our friends from Queens are now 4-22. They will visit Georgia tomorrow afternoon. That is a 2 p.m. first pitch start time, Central Time, and you can find it on the SEC Network Plus if you're so inclined to watch some afternoon baseball. Jackson State will visit Ole Miss. The Tigers are 16-10 overall, 6-5 in the conference, headed to Ole Miss. And I know that all of us will be really pulling for Joseph Eichelberger and the Tigers in that ballgame. Wouldn't that be grand? Tennessee Tech will visit Tennessee. North Florida at Florida. Presbyterian, 14-15 overall, 6-3, will visit South Carolina. It'll be interesting, you know, what happens in this ball game. You think South Carolina should win this thing handily, but they're kind of in a situation like we are. You can't take anything for granted. Arkansas will play Grambling and North Little Rock. That's an interesting interesting location for a non-conference midweek affair. And, of course, Mississippi State will travel to Memphis. Tigers are 11-16. We'll preview them in the final segment of the show. 0-6 in American Athletic Conference play. Western Kentucky, this could be one of those games, too. You look up and you're like, hey, what's going on here? Western Kentucky's at Vanderbilt. Guys, Western Kentucky is 25-3. Yeah, let that sink in for a second. And two of those three losses came in league play. So Western Kentucky will be jacked to go to Nashville and play a 23-ranked Vanderbilt team that is kind of on the skids. And I told you guys at the beginning of the year, and you know what? I was wrong about us. I thought that we were probably ranked correctly at 18. I felt Vanderbilt was overrated, and clearly we both were. But to be honest with you, I think Vanderbilt is not done losing games, and that could very well be a game to watch on Tuesday. Samford will be at Alabama. Alabama 25-4 and 6-3 in the league. UAB will be at Auburn. UAB been pretty good in midweek games too. Arkansas Pine Bluff 5-23. The Golden Lions will visit Missouri 9-17 overall. And so you'd like to think that the Tigers can get a win there, but nothing is assured. Incarnate Word will be at Texas A&M. And again, if you're Texas A&M, can you afford to overlook Incarnate Word? I don't think you can. They're 13-17 and 1-14 in their conference. But I think at this point, things are so contentious at College Station. I just don't know if you can afford to overlook that. There will be another interesting game, too, midweek. Oklahoma and Texas Tech will meet in Frisco. That'll be an interesting game there, too. Texas Tech, historically, under Timmy Tadlock, has put together a good program. Texas State will be at Texas, and Louisiana Tech, 16-11, 3-2 in their league, will be at LSU. So, going to be an interesting Tuesday. We'll take a quick look. We won't spend a lot of time on this, but a quick look at the weekend to come because, man, it seems like these games get on you so fast, right? I mean, you all know it just as well as I do. And it just seems like there's just so many games so quickly. The only game on Wednesday is University of Arkansas Pine Bluff at Missouri. But there will be some Thursday baseball. Ole Miss will visit Lexington, Kentucky. We'll definitely be pulling for the Mingione experience. And then LSU travels to Oklahoma. That could be interesting, too. I just don't think that Oklahoma has the pitching to contend with that lineup. That LSU lineup is relentless. I mean, you guys saw it yourself, right? Vanderbilt will be at Florida this week. Alabama and Auburn getting together at Auburn. You know, that'll be an interesting one. Auburn gets swept and are still ranked 16th. A&M will be at Tennessee. I mean, think about that for a second. As bad as things have gone for Texas A&M, now you got to go to Knoxville and take on Tennessee. Of course, South Carolina is here. Georgia will be at Texas. That'll be a fun series to watch. Georgia at Texas. Does the Georgia power game travel at Austin, Texas? And in Missouri, is it Arkansas? Who's red hot? Number two team in the country. And as long as Dave Van Horn is there, they're going to be a very good team. And then quickly, too, we'll look at the standings, because you know, sometimes we're not aware, right? State's actually tied for 12th in the league right now. Did you know that? I bet you didn't. But Arkansas, Georgia, Tennessee, and Texas, all 8-1 in the league. It'll be a very interesting run. My money is on Tennessee. LSU 7-2, and then there's Alabama and Ole Miss right there at 6-3. Oklahoma's 5-4. Auburn, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, 4-5. Florida, Mississippi State, South Carolina, A&M, 1-8. And then Missouri, 0-9 in the league. And so, yeah, I guess things could always be worse, but, more on that later. But the reality of it is that we have played some difficult games and maybe have not fared as well as we should. I really thought worst-case scenario for us after the first three weekends was 3-6. I thought more than likely it would be 4-5. I thought we'd take one from Texas, take two at Oklahoma, and at least get one at LSU. And I think you could argue that should have been the case. It hasn't been, but that certainly should have been the case. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you and I predict. It's what the team does on the field. Simple as that. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, right? The best place to stay in the Golden Triangle if you're bringing a large group to town, and chances are you want to, even if you hadn't planned to. How many times do we say it? We don't get together enough. And how cool is it to have all the kids together, let all the cousins play together? How much fun is it to see your kids interacting with your friends' kids or your nieces and nephews? Plan that. Give that joy of life to yourself. And maybe it's not about the kids. Maybe it's about the adults. Maybe it's a college roommates weekend. Maybe it's a fraternity brothers weekend. We don't want you getting crazy out there, but it's a great place to have a lot of room to spread out and have some privacy and peace of quiet. Not a lot of neighbors out there. We don't want you throwing a rager. But 6-bedroom, 2-bath, soon to be 3. The great full-service kitchen, the back porch area, the wet bar, the fire pit area. We're still having some cool nights, so you can make a fire and sit out there and just kind of enjoy having a cold one and kind of catching up. But the best part of it is just being all under the same roof. Rather than have 5 hotel rooms scattered all over the place and you never can get a hold of everybody, you got these great living quarters, and then people have their own private bedrooms where they can retreat at night and kind of get some rest. But we had a great time when we stayed there, and I think you will as well. Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and their Facebook page will auto-populate. You can peruse all the amenities available to you and your guest. And when you Google, also some booking options will pop up. It's Airbnb, VRBO. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's Beautiful Steve Robertson and the number 10, BSR10, and get 10% off your stay just by being a loyal listener to this show. All right, a lot of questions and a lot of rumors out there that are rumors, not really rooted in fact. A lot of people are like, hey, it needs to be a coaching change. And, you know, here's the thing. I will offer you, it's so interesting, when you offer sometimes reporting, people take that as opinion. So based on some conversations that I had over the weekend, we have not begun any process to make any coaching change. And I know some other people out there have suggested otherwise. I can tell you, based on the sourcing that I have, which is impeccable, that is not really the case. Now, I'll go back a little bit to the Zach Arnett situation. We had advance notice that Zach Arnett was not going to be retained. We learned out Tuesday before the Texas A&M game that, hey, he's not going to be retained. There's some folks in Lee Hall that would like to do this thing at the end of the year to kind of have some dignity and respect. That doesn't mean that we can't do due diligence, right? I mean, just because we haven't fired a coach doesn't mean we can't begin the due diligence to replace a coach, right? So a lot of people said, hey, you know what? We have to fire the guy to begin the process. And that's just not true. But I remember asking them, I said, hey, if we go to A&M and we get embarrassed by a third-team quarterback, what happens then? Like, well, then all bets are off. And, of course, I spent the entire Sunday working the phones trying to get information for you guys. And the truth of the matter is I do believe Zach Arnett would have been fired that Sunday if Zach Selman did not have a meeting with donors already scheduled well in advance for that Sunday. So, of course, first thing Monday morning, he was fired. And I don't think that's room to criticize Zach Selman about anything. He needed to go meet with those donors. That was all part of an NIL thing. And what can be done on Sunday can be done on Monday. And so a lot of that, too, was like, you know, hey, if we didn't make a move with Zach Arnett, you know, we would have nothing left, right? And Greg Knox, of course, came in, beat Southern Miss, and gave Ole Miss a lot of trouble. And, you know, hey, they were a better team than us. But I say that because of the fact that we had advance notice of that. And I believe we're extremely well-sourced. It's very rare that we get surprised by things. There's a lot of news out there, and there are some things that happen from time to time. But I have worked the phones extensively because not because of the fact that I felt something was afoot, but other people like you were kind of reaching out saying, hey, I'm hearing this and hearing that and hearing that. And so I made some calls because I just wanted to inquire. And, at this point, there's nothing brewing. That's not to say that things won't change. And some people think, well, Steve, you're advocating for a coach. Guys, I'm going to support every coach as long as they're the coach at Mississippi State. I haven't offered an opinion about what I think is best for Mississippi State baseball, and there are many times that I don't know. I think the best case scenario for us is for Chris Simonis to make it and have a great year and then a great year next year. I know that 2022 and 2023 weigh on all of us. And a lot of it's because we had finally made it. We had finally made it to the top of the college baseball hill. And there were so many people pulling for us that love college baseball and say, it's time for Mississippi State to win one because, number one, it's great for college baseball because of the enormous commitment Mississippi State has made over the years. They need to be rewarded for that investment. And we thought, okay, we're finally here. There were a lot of predictions in 2022 before the year began that Mississippi State was an 8 for Omaha, that we'd have a chance to go back and repeat, a chance to at least get back and defend the title. And it was a terrible, terrible, terrible season. Now, it was also an injury-riddled season, and sometimes we forget that. And I read the revisionist history because we have a lot of people that appear that have a BS degree, and I mean BS for exactly what you think I mean, a BS degree in revisionist history, and said, hey, we should have made the coaching change in 2022. Well, that's easy to say now. There's never been a head coach in the history of college baseball that is fired the year after winning a national championship. It's never happened before. And nor should it, right? Just 1 year removed from a title, you're ready to fire a coach? I mean, come on. You know, come on. 2023 happens, right? And then everybody's like, you know what? We got to get this thing turned around. Zach Selman was the new athletic director. He was not going to make his first item of business to fire the only coach that's won a national championship his first year on the job. 2024, we win 40 games, something we've only done 24 times in school history. Did we leave meat on the bone? You better believe it. Well, there were a lot of moments last year that were very frustrating. Absolutely, there were. And, of course, you start thinking about, you know, how close you were to finishing top three in this league. You finished fifth. You could have been third, right? I mean, you let a couple of games get away at Arkansas. You let a couple of games get away at Florida. It's a completely different dynamic. Not only are you hosting, goodness, you win those games and you don't lose a couple of those stupid midweek games, you're potentially a top eight national seed. But at the end of the day, it's not about potential, it's about production. What did you do? Last year was a good year. Not a great year, but a good year. And I think that buys you a little more time, right? And now some people begin to wonder, hey, is this going to be more like last year? Or is this going to be more like 22 and 23? I would go back and say, go back and look at some of those scores. But, you know, we'll see how things go. But at the end of the day, it's about winning. And as I wrote yesterday, it's the losing that divides us. It's not really opinions about coaches or lineups. It's losing, right? We're always going to have difference of opinions about the minutia of baseball and football and basketball. But we can deal with all of that when we're winning. When we're losing, everything is magnified. And then we begin to kind of turn on each other. One of the things I said on Twitter yesterday, I'm tired of arguing with our people, so I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm not going to do it anymore. Because I want the same things that you do. And it's hypocritical of me to come out here and suggest that perhaps my opinion's greater than yours. Because you know what? You may be right. I may have it all wrong. I don't think so, but I may. I'm open to that. I know that I don't have the corner of the market on all the answers. I know this. But I know this, I know that I want Mississippi State to win. You know, even if I didn't have a business that was dependent on the success of Mississippi State, if I was just a fan selling insurance, I would want Mississippi State to win. It's true. And so I just want to win games. And the truth of the matter is, I don't care who's filling out the lineup card. I want Mississippi State to win. It wouldn't matter to me if the faculty coach of the day was calling the shots as long as we won. Because at the end of the day, that's what matters most. We need Mississippi State baseball to be good. The town of Starkville needs Mississippi State to be good. We got a lot of merchants here that are relying on all of you to come to town to enjoy a ballgame weekend, to get a hotel room or an Airbnb and go out to eat and buy some merchandise while you're here. It all is connected. You know, we own a business here in town too, you know. And while we've been busy, we're busier when Mississippi State is busy. And so, yeah, we need you guys to be here. And some of you are so incredibly loyal, you're going to come no matter what. And I appreciate that. There are going to be other people that's like, Steve, I can't do it. And I respect that too. Everybody's got a decision to make. But my loyalty is to Mississippi State. I am a principles before personalities person, period. My loyalty is not to an individual, not a coach, not a player, not an administrator, not even a university president. I am loyal to them as long as they are involved in trying to advance our academic and athletic interests. Everybody that represents Mississippi State is a friend of mine. I am for Mississippi State, and I am for everybody else that is for Mississippi State. I want you to be successful. I want you to have a great experience. I want your businesses to be successful. I want you to be able to donate to Mississippi State. I want you to raise your kids, and they have a great experience at Mississippi State. All of those things are important to me, and more important to me than any personal relationships. And so it's so interesting when you put something out there that is true but is unpopular, people attack the messenger. I'm used to it. I've got alligator skin. I've been doing this since 1997. You know, long before podcasting was a thing, I was writing about Mississippi State. And so coming up on 30 years of that. And so I'm used to it, right? I'm used to it. And a lot of times you guys, you don't hear what you want to hear, and it angers you. And it's interesting, there are some people out there, they want me to agree with them. And it's so interesting to have people that say, well, Steve, my sources say this. Well, if your sources are saying that, why do you need me to validate it? If you're so well-sourced, why do you need my thumbs up to validate your information? And I would say maybe 95% of the time when somebody contacts me and, you know, just, I mean, I'm talking a rank and file person. Hey, this is what my sources are telling me. They're just fishing for information. They don't really have any. And so I share that with you because it's amazing as these things begin to kind of bubble up, all of a sudden we have a lot of walk-on experts who have an imaginary friend as a source. And it's really, hey, this is what I think, but I'll attribute it to a source to give it greater validity. And a lot of times it's what people want to hear. And so they're thinking, hell yeah, yeah, well, I agree with him because I want to see a coaching change, right? Even if that guy has no clue what they're talking about. But you hear what you want to hear and you bite into that, then all of a sudden somebody comes out and says, yep, it's premature. No decisions have been made and you don't like it. And it's not that you think I'm wrong, it's just you hope that I'm wrong. And I don't take it personally. Just so you guys know, I don't take it personally. But I kind of got sucked into it the other night. I was frustrated, I was tired. And I'm on Twitter trying to answer questions. And I knew what I was going to get into. And I said, hey, let's have a Q&A. And I started not to do it because I didn't want to have to answer questions about the coaching staff. I didn't want to. But I felt like, you know what? Let's open up the dialogue here and give me a chance to at least share what I've heard. And everything is subject to change. Everything. You know, the bottom line is coaches have to win. That's what they're hired to do. It's not just about graduation rates. It's not just about showing up the alumni fundraisers and things like that. They're paid to win. And you got to win. And when you don't win enough, you don't get to stay. But it's decisions hadn't been made yet. And so I share that with you because I think it's important for you to understand. You know, sometimes my personal opinion may not be what you think it is. But my reporting is always going to be exactly what I'm hearing from very trusted and well-placed sources. But if there's an opinion that I offer, I'll tell you this is my opinion. But I'll tell you this, and I know this for a fact, this isn't an opinion. Mississippi State needs to have a great week of baseball. We could do no worse than 3-1. We need to go 4-0. You know, and then a lot of this chatter will die down a little bit. But there are some people that no matter what we do, I mean, we could go to Omaha this year, and there are going to be some people that will be like, you know what, I just don't think that there's enough consistency with Mississippi State baseball. We should be consistently playing for significant things. We should be Arkansas. Right? A lot of people mention Tennessee. But, you know, Arkansas is a team that, you know, they always host. You know, they're always in the mix for a top eight national seed, even when they don't host. And a lot of people look at that and say, hey, we should be just what they're doing. You know, they are our contemporary. And we've won an AFL championship, and they haven't. And so, yeah, we should be operating at the same level they are. And I understand that. I don't think that's unreasonable, right? You know, we've had some bad luck at times, so we've also made some bad decisions. And so there is an ebb and flow with all of this. And a friend of mine said this recently, too. We talk about, you know, expectations. And I'm big on Mississippi State baseball history. Written a lot of books about it. But he said something that made sense to me, and I had to agree with him. He goes, you know, our expectations changed when we built the stadium. And I think that's fair. It's like, hey, yeah, we've done all these things in the past, and maybe we haven't hosted as often as we remember. But we built this cathedral because we wanted to host just about every year. And we haven't been able to host in the new stadium but a couple times. And so, yeah, that's the issue. So, yeah, our expectations changed. And I think that's fair. And, you know, I had not really looked at it through that lens. Because the back and forth sometimes, you know how it is. You don't really listen. You're just ready to talk again. But I had a chance to think about that. And I said, yeah, he's right. We didn't go out and make this financial commitment to build this stadium to not host regionals. Yeah, we want to make a regional every year. I think a road regional should be the floor for us, right? I mean, that should be an expectation that we are in the NCAA tournament every year. I don't think that's far-fetched. When you think about it, you finish around 500 in league play. You win most of your midweek games, your non-conference stuff. You're going to be in a tournament. I don't think that's too much to ask to be in a regional every year and to host most years. And so, again, we haven't done it a whole lot. Probably done it a lot less than you think. But expectations changed when we built the new stadium. We didn't just build it to build it. We built it because we wanted to host things of significance there. And that doesn't mean a Hardy concert. All due respect to Hardy. That's not what I'm suggesting. But, you know, we built that stadium for college baseball purposes, and we need to make sure that it's being used for its intended purpose. Right? And so I think we can all be agreed in that. But just because I report something that you don't want to hear, doesn't mean that I'm wrong. Right? It also doesn't mean things can't change. That's important to understand, too. It's all, every one of these things are day-to-day, right? And I don't mean game-to-game. Everything is fluid, right? And so we got to go out and win some ball games. Simple as that. And to root against Chris Simonis is to root against Mississippi State. That's just something I can't do. I just can't. You know, like, but Steve, you know, what about the greater good? You know, just like when you guys rooted against Arnett down the stretch. You know, we made a mistake. We need him to lose enough. We don't want him to win enough that we had to keep him. We got to fire him. And we did. And maybe there is a bigger picture at play here. But you know what? We won two games last year. You know, and so I just kind of threw that out there. Sometimes, as the descendants of those that led to the dismissal of Alan McKean, they're not allowed to tell you these days, but they made a big mistake. You know, just because you don't get what you wanted doesn't mean that Mississippi State isn't listening. But Mississippi State can't make everybody happy. You can't. The only way you make everybody happy, and I've got a friend of mine that works in college athletics that worked at Mississippi State, and he goes, you know, Steve, the thing is, you can't make everybody happy unless you give them everything they want. And you simply can't give them everything they want. So you're always going to have some people that are going to be unhappy. Simple as that. And so you got to figure out what's better for the institution and the athletic department. That's what you have to focus on. Because you're going to always have dissenting votes. You're going to have people out there that prioritize some sports over others. And hey, you're giving too much money to this. Or why aren't we doing more to that? We need to do more facility upgrades here. There's always that, right? And so you can't please everybody. And that's one of the profound truths of life. You can't please everybody. There's always going to be somebody. It's just a great example. You've seen the joke, I'm sure, making the rounds. The comedian, you know. Adam and Eve are in the Garden of Eden. I don't think I've shared this with you guys, but Adam and Eve are in the Garden of Eden, and Adam turns to Eve and says, hey, you know, isn't it great? We're here. You know, we'll never die. All of our dreams come true as soon as we dream them. We never have to work. We never have to be without food. And then Eve says, yeah, it's just not enough, is it? And there's some people like that. Right? There's some people like that. No matter what you do or what you contribute or what you accomplish, it's just not enough, you know, and it's part of the journey. But I love each and every one of you, even if you don't love me back. I do, because you love Mississippi State. As I mentioned, I'm for everybody. You know, I love it when you guys come to games and buy Mississippi State merchandise and rep the brand and wear the brand with pride. I love it. And I want you to be rewarded for your loyalty to the institution. I do. That's what I want. Really, above all things, when I think about all of you, I want you to have great experiences and take pride in Mississippi State and take pride in what we're able to accomplish on the athletic fields of the Southeastern Conference. That's very important. Now, if you haven't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com and you can get signed copies of The Dude, which is currently the number 4 best-selling book in the state of Mississippi. How cool is that? That's pretty nice, man. Things have been out about 6 months and we're still in the top 5. Pretty cool. Yeah, but while you're there, you can get all my sports titles and, of course, When the Bottom Falls as well. Signed copies if you need them, for sure. And come float with us over at True West Floats by Starkville. And, guys, I'm telling you, your wife may not have mentioned it, but, yeah, she'd love to come float. It might be a good idea to buy a couple of floats and let her and a girlfriend come. You can come, but maybe you don't want to. Maybe that's a girls' night thing, you know. But I tell you, if you've got nagging injuries or chronic pain or anxiety or you just need a break, we may be able to help you too. Super cool, right? Dial 662-268-7601. You can speak directly to my lovely wife, Dana, who has had to be without me a lot here as of late as the Bulldogs have been on the road. But, yeah, she's taking care of everything. Yeah, love her to death. And if you're not a member of Gene's Page, you can jump aboard now for 50% off the annual price. Just go to jeanspage.com today. In the top right-hand corner, it says Join Now. And there is a promo, 50% off. That's going to run for a few more weeks. It's not going to run forever. And, of course, it gets you through spring practice and college baseball season and whatever is to come with college baseball. Yeah. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.